of a white.
All right, welcome back, folks.
White Christmas,
I again find myself in this position where I just... This story shouldn't need elaboration, but I feel like it does. I'm in a position where I really have to beg you to care about this, because I could just tell you about it, but that's what these publications are doing, and nobody seems to care. I wish you would. I really wish you would, and it's hard not to just do the cliche thing at this point and just swap out a couple words and read the article, then maybe that would get through to you. The story, if you're just tuning in, new report raises alarm over state inspections of Catholic schools in France. So in July, revelations of physical and sexual abuse at Notre Dame de Bethlehem, a Catholic boarding school in southwestern France, triggered a nationwide debate on how abuse in schools is identified, reported, and addressed, alongside similar cases at other institutions. A parliamentary inquiry subsequently examined these cases, highlighting serious institutional failures while also prompting questions about how oversight is carried out at faith-based schools operating under state contract. So this is what the actual inquisition looks like. According to testimonies gathered, inspections have at times taken the form of what the report calls disproportionate show of force. Inspectors reportedly arrived unannounced in groups of 10 to 16, dispersing throughout school buildings without accompaniment, interrupting classes, photographing classrooms, questioning students, and even searching pupils' backpacks. Some teachers describe inspectors entering classrooms without identifying themselves, leafing through students' notebooks mid-lesson, and interrogating staff in front of children. Catholic educators say the nature of the questions being asked has been particularly troubling. Teachers reported being questioned about their personal religious practices, including whether they attend Sunday Mass. Inspectors allegedly examined and took pictures of students' private spiritual journals, their personal spiritual journals, documents explicitly intended to remain private. Principals recount being pressured to remove Christian references from school projects or to take down religious symbols, demands that directly contradict the legal recognition of Catholic schools' distinctive character under French law. How is this being allowed to go on? This is clearly, unambiguously, state repression of religious institutions. What else would this be? I mean, it literally sounds like I'm describing the Inquisition. Some random Catholic school in the French countryside suddenly has 16 agents bust in and just start wandering into classrooms, questioning the teachers in front of the children, taking the children's, you know, personal, spiritual, private journals and photographing them for state evidence. It's like, this is pure, unadulterated, anti-Christian state repression and intimidation of Catholics in France. Could not be more obvious. Again, I don't even want to, but it is such a effective thing, but it's so simple to do, where if you literally just rewrote this as if it was French inspectors storming into Jewish schools, taking pictures of what they're writing, demanding that they take down Jewish references to in school projects. It's like, would there be any ambiguity about this? Would anybody be going, well, it may seem intimidating, but, you know, it's just inspections that the state has to do. No, it's clear what the intention of this is. It's clear what the methods they're using are, clear what the effect is going to be. They are deliberately trying to crush the Christian spirit in France, obviously. And I wouldn't be surprised if the people doing this weren't Christian, right? Just like we see in the UK, where you've got, you know, little girls being raped and going to the police. And what do you know? The police captain himself is in the gang because they want to make the minorities feel included by, you know, hiring them into official positions. So I bet you got a bunch of Muslims being given, you know, state authority to go kick in the doors of Catholic schools and question their teachers. Yeah, we should be against this.
challenging all of you to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds, we are in the red, and we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy a new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products and a whole bunch of other sales and deals. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and it reorders every month and get 50% off on all future orders. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at x.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Very happy to welcome my guest, Carlin Borashenko. You can find her work at carlin.substack.com, decodetheleft.com, and youtube.com/Dr. Carlin B. That's DrKarlynB. She is a psychologist turned journalist and anti-communist activist dedicated to exposing radical left ideologies. A former longtime Democrat who shifted perspectives after personal experiences with progressive activism, she's conducted in-depth investigations into far left movements and continues to. You can actually contribute to her investigations live through her platforms like Decode the Left, her Substack, her YouTube channel, and books such as Actively Unwoke. Carlin provides deep dives, undercover reporting, and actionable strategies to counter collectivist ideas. Carlin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me again. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, and it's been too long, honestly. And as soon as I saw the arrest of the Turtle Island Liberation Front, you were the first person I thought of. What do you know about this group, the arrests that were made? Have you looked into this very much? What do you have for us?
Yeah, I actually immediately went to all their social media and started scouring the social media. I actually archived every single post on their Instagram account just in case it goes away. They had a lot of propaganda on their Instagram account. You know, Harrison, I'm up 2 months about this. First of all, I do think there's something to the fact that I do think the FBI probably gave them the bomb making capabilities, because right. That's generally not something the far left has access to. But the fact of the matter is I do believe that this is a real far left group with experienced far left activists. And the reason I say that is I've read through all of the propaganda on their Instagram account, and it is exactly like the propaganda that I see at far left book fairs and in their anarchist libraries and things like that. So I do believe that this is a group that, you know, one of the things so what's striking to me is the framing of the narrative of this being a pro-Palestine group in conservative right. media and coming out of the FBI and the DOJ. But the fact of the matter is this group is far more anti-American than they are pro-Palestine. That is their modus operandi. In fact, Turtle Island is a reference to the what they call the decolonized North America. So it's essentially a reference to death to America, overthrowing the government, overthrowing the Constitution, giving the land back that was stolen when the evil Europeans came and conquered the land and all that stuff. And so I'm curious as to why the government is framing this as a pro-Palestine group when, in fact, it's really more of an anti-American group than anything else.
Yeah, I had that. We're exactly the same mind, actually. I don't know if you've seen any of my coverage, but I said exactly the same thing. They put pro-Palestine as sort of, they front-load that, right? There's a pro-Palestine group that also had anti-American ideas, but looking at their propaganda, sure, you see Free Palestine on their poster, but it's not the primary thing they're concerned about. And as you point out, Turtle Island, I guess it's what I don't know which group of natives, but some group of Native Americans referred to America as Turtle Island. So it's almost like we're going back to before Europeans were here and calling it what the natives called it, right, is where that name comes from. But then this was, I guess, a breakaway splinter group from Turtle Island, and this was the Black Lotus group, or do I have that reversed? And what do you make of this constellation of Antifa groups? I mean, it's nice to know that they have names, which seems to mean like they're in a conspiracy, which seems to mean like you could go after them with RICO. Am I missing something here?
Well, I think, you know, what people need to understand about Antifa is that Antifa is a highly decentralized organization. There are thousands of Antifa cells nationwide. And like you said, they all have different names, and most of those names do not involve Antifa. So you might see names like Collective, Liberation, InfoShop, Distro. This Turtle Island Liberation Front is an obvious, like, Antifa group, because actually there's a tweet on their account where they openly declared that they're Antifa. So this is not even up to speculation. They were calling themselves Antifa. And so it's one of those things that it's difficult to prove a RICO investigation, though, because the funding for Antifa mostly comes from mutual aid, which is small cash donations that are really untraceable. And so I have a hard time believing that there's any head of the snake that connects all the Antifa groups. But just understanding that this is a highly decentralized model, they're communicating through different websites. They actually have a whole network online called No Blogs, where they post anarchist literature and they share ideas and tactics and things like that. That's usually what I look towards when I'm trying to figure out what Antifa is doing on any given day.
So do you think it's possible to, like, take the... Well, let's stick with this bust right now. From Zero Hedge, FBI arrests a fifth Trantifa militant in NYE bomb plot. So it was a New Year's Eve bomb plot. And we saw that they had the satellite or the spy plane footage while they were testing the explosives in the desert. Seems to me like they had somebody inside this group from early on. We know they had a paid confidential human source that had been supplying FBI information for like 4 years at this point, started in 2021. So from what I've gathered is you had people in this Turtle Island group. They wanted to commit violence of some sort. Somebody inside that cell was in contact with the FBI, informed them. We know the FBI usually then gets involved, then will actually provide the bomb-making material because they want to basically lead the person as far down the path to terrorism as they can get before interrupting it and saying, we busted them, because you want to get the, in order to get the conviction, you have to show these people weren't just, you know, talking or thinking about doing this. They actually went and made the bomb. They actually went and tested it. So they often let them sort of get far down the practice. What do you think can be done better by the FBI? Is this the best way to do it? Is this the best way to confront Antifa? Is the modus operandi that we see on display? Or do you think there's a better way to approach this?
Well, first of all, they aren't charging these people as Antifa domestic terrorists so far as I've seen. And so I don't even know. I don't understand what the point of the Antifa domestic terrorism executive order is if they aren't going to use it when they have an obvious example of an Antifa, self-professed Antifa group right in front of us. So that would be the first question I have, again, for the DOJ and the FBI. Why is this being framed as a pro-Palestine group when, in fact, this is actual self-professed Antifa? I also do want to say I really take issue with the term Antifa. It's actually a made-up term that doesn't really have a lot of relevance on the far left. And this is important because there is a militant queer activism movement on the far left. It's just called the Bashback Movement, and they refer to themselves as that. And that's a whole other, you know, crazy amount of dystopia. But I actually don't see any evidence that this group is directly related to queer militancy specifically. It's more about giving the land back and demanding the land be given back. Now, what I will say is that this group is representative of a trend that I've seen on the far left over the last several months, where there are all these manifestos coming out where they're basically rejecting the idea of nonviolent protest. And this was really brought on by the No Kings protest, both back in, I think it was June, and then again in October, where they're basically saying in these manifestos, and this is across a whole bunch of different Antifa groups, so it's not just one specifically, they're saying it's great that all these people are coming out and they want to be activists against the Trump administration, but these silly liberals are trying to force us into a position of engaging in nonviolent action where we don't think that nonviolent action is actually going to get us what we need. And so this is just yet another example of there's a big push on the left to embrace violent direct action in some form or another, whether that is setting off bombs in major American cities, whether that's lighting police precincts on fire. Antifa's publishing arm CrimeThink just yesterday released a huge retrospective of the year of 2025 and all the different activism they did. And at the end of that retrospective, they called for explicit rejection of nonviolence moving into 2026. So I think that certainly the FBI was involved in terms of like making sure they had the bomb making materials, making sure they were facilitating all this so that they could get their big kind of like arrest. But bigger picture, even if this was a completely like FBI psyoped operation, this is representative of a trend towards active violence that we are seeing on the far left. And I do hope that people take this seriously.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that's what we talked about the first time you came on, because it was right in the midst of the Tesla protest. And we were noticing, okay, it's all old boomers going to these Tesla protests, and people were treating that as success, going, ha, we've demoralized the left. And you and I were going, no, they're just not protesting. They just don't think protesting is worth it anymore. They're moving to direct action. And it does seem like we're seeing more of this. Now, apparently this fifth arrest happened in Louisiana. So obviously they weren't there on the ground doing it, but we're in communications. So again, what can they do? Or are they just choosing not to go after these people as Antifa? Because again, it seems to me like we've got these arrests, which is good. Obviously I want these people arrested, just like I want the people that carried out the ambush on the ICE facility in Texas to get arrested. But it seems like we're only arresting the people that are on the ground actively trying to, or actually committing violence against people. And that's like the bare minimum. What more could we do to try to stop the momentum that Antifa has right now?
I mean, I don't want to underestimate, like, for people, the amount of momentum that Antifa does have, particularly around anti-ICE organizing. Anti-ICE organizing has been phenomenally successful for them this year. They are doubling down on it. They've literally chased the Trump administration out of Chicago. Right. They've prevented deportations in major cities. And the thing of it is we have this, again, this executive order declaring Antifa a terrorist organization. Well, every single ICE protest out of every single ICE facility, that is Antifa. Every single time they are handing out these whistle kits in communities to teach people how to warn each other about ICE showing up. Every single time they're showing up at ICE hotels in the middle of the night, beating drums and preventing people from sleeping, or doxing ICE agents as they drive out of the facility by taking down their license plates and then sharing that information. This is all Antifa. This is all the far left. And it is explicit. These groups talk about it online all the time. And so I have a really hard time understanding why the Trump administration even issued this executive order in the first place if they weren't actively going to go after the groups that are trying to massively disrupt all the mass deportation efforts. And to be quite frank, Harrison, on Antifa websites, they are declaring victory over the Trump administration and only going to be doubling down on anti-ICE activism moving into 2026, because it has been an incredibly powerful organizing and recruiting tool for them. It's also helping them to radicalize people who are more liberal and progressive to the far left. And I think that this is a big area that the Trump administration could be cracking down on very severely, and they're not.
Yeah, I sure. I mean, it's just immense frustration as we see these people just flagrantly violate the law, like interrupting the ICE agents, ramming their cars into ICE agents, and the Trump administration just does absolutely nothing. It is not just pathetic. I genuinely feel like it's dangerous, because you're actually teaching the left that they can be violent without repercussion. And we're going to be on the receiving ends of that if something isn't done about this. You know, I want to stick with ICE, but just since it's in my mind, yesterday we played a video, I'm sure you saw it, of this Antifa member, black bloc, decked out person, standing outside of a gated community in Los Angeles, just filming everybody come in and out. Have you seen that video? What do you make of that? I mean, it seems like pure intimidation. Like, they are literally basically posting signs outside of gated neighborhoods going, we're making lists to kill you. And it's like nobody's doing anything about it. Have you seen that video? What did you make of that?
Oh, well, I haven't seen that video explicitly, but what's funny is I've actually been on multiple organizing calls where they're not just standing outside telling people they're putting them on a list. They're making entire websites, putting extremely wealthy Americans on lists. They're making databases that people can actually go and look up the millionaires and the billionaires in their neighborhoods to stalk them, to harass them. And this is all on the internet right now. And so that doesn't surprise me at all that that happened.
Yeah, it just seems, again, it's like when they have the gall to not even hide it. I mean, and the crew can pull up the video from yesterday. We can play it here, because the guy, he's just standing right there. He's not hiding. He's not in the bushes. I mean, it's intimidation. It's not even just that they're, you know, plotting something. They like want you to know that they're plotting it. That's how confident they are. So that to me is genuinely scary. I mean, when they're willing to do that, that's kind of terrifying. Gateway Pundit had this article today, exploring the legality of anti-ICE resistance training, because this has gotten incredibly popular. Again, like, how do we fight back against this, Carlin? Because I don't want to just say, screw it, the problem's so bad, I want the government going, you know, no holds barred, no restrictions, no judicial review, just crush them. Because I still have that American impulse to go, that's Pandora's box, don't open that. But I can't see what else we do when they're just openly doing this and we don't have laws apparently capable of stopping them. What can we do?
I mean, you're probably a better person than I am, Harrison, because I think the response to this is Trump needs to go full on. Like, I want to see buses going into immigrant neighborhoods and deporting people en masse. I want to see, like, them loading them onto trucks and driving them back to Mexico, because I really think, listen, when you read the Antifa literature, what they're saying is they're calling Trump's bluff, like, overtly on their websites. They're saying Trump may be calling us domestic terrorists, but we don't actually believe he's going to do anything. And so we need to double down on our direct action. And they're seeing success after success after success, and the Trump administration isn't arresting anyone. And I think the anti-ICE thing is a really interesting thing to go down, because actually right now on my desktop I have a massive spreadsheet of over 60 different organizations. Do you know what they did in addition to doing this anti-ICE training? They set up hotlines all over the country, like hotlines that are just run allegedly by private citizens, where people can call and report when ICE is in their neighborhood, and then the hotline disseminates that information to all the different groups. And all of these hotlines are coordinated with immigrant rights groups. And so if we're talking about doing an investigation for RICO funding, this connection of all of these different ICE hotlines popping up all over the country, and they're also distributing the anti-ICE literature, that I think is actually a much more fruitful route to go down. Go after every single organization that's promoting these hotlines. And by the way, there are government agencies in the state of California and in New York explicitly that have these hotlines on their website. These are not government-run hotlines, but they're promoting them out there to the communities. And so that's something I'm actively working on right now, is to try to map all this out so that we can get a sense of how this national network works and how they coordinate with each other.
Yeah, again, they're not shy about it. They don't feel like they need to hide it. And it just seems like the Trump administration is doing the worst of all options, right? I mean, crushing them, great. Not doing anything about it, not great, not the worst. Pissing them off, saying you're going to do something and then doing nothing, it's the worst possible choice to make. It is truly inexplicable. Where do you think it goes from here? I guess we know where it goes from here, right? Should we start talking about May 1st, 2028? I feel like we need to keep hammering this out, keep letting people know this is coming. You should be prepared for it. There's no excuse. If this actually comes to fruition, there's no excuse. We should be able to shut it down today. What's going to happen on May Day 2028, Carlin?
Yeah, so and I so appreciate you talking about this, because you're the only person that I've seen in right-leaning media that's talking about this, which is what the left is doing in about 2.5 years, is they are planning on launching a mass general strike on May 1st, 2028, where they are coordinating across all the different labor unions to essentially shut down the economy. And what I mean is, very specifically, the teachers' unions are all involved in this. The Starbucks workers' unions are involved in this. We see Starbucks doing practice strikes right now to practice for this. We see auto workers are involved in this. Airlines are involved in this. Grocery stores are involved in this. All the different unions are coming together to say, we're basically all going to go on strike at the same time on May 1st, 2028. Now, one thing that we haven't talked about previously, Harrison, I don't think, is that the left is planning on doing practice runs up until this. So right now, we are actually seeing there is a nationwide Starbucks strike right now, where Starbucks workers are basically refusing to go into work. They're trying to convince vendors that bring things to the store to turn around and not do deliveries. They're talking to customers outside of Starbucks to say, hey, we're on strike for a reason X, Y, B, and Z, to kind of soften the public, to get them used to stuff like this. And what I think we're going to see on May 1st, 2026, so coming up in about five months now, is we're going to see the first major practice strike, because they're actively talking about how do we get people prepared to do this and training people on how to do it. They're actually right now, their organizations holding what they're calling strike schools all over the country. So they're actually going into these different communities, and people are going and learning how to organize to strike. The DSA is part of a lot of this. The DSA actually has a salting campaign where they are getting people jobs and organizations specifically to get them to agitate for the unions, to form as many unions as possible leading up to May 1st, 2028. And so they're working to shut down the economy. And I think that they should be taken a lot more seriously than they're being taken. And I think we're in for a world of hurt over the next couple of years if people don't start really focusing on this issue.
And the point of the strike is that they want to shut down the entire economy of America as a hostage technique. They have demands. They have a list of demands, and their intentions, well publicized, it's not us coming up with this. They say their intentions are to shut down the American economy until their demands are met. And they want universal health care. They want all the stuff that they can't win through elections because the American people don't want it. So they're using their positions in the unions and their power over our economy to try to force us to accept socialism because they can't actually win in a fair fashion. Is that about right?
Well, I think it is that, but it even goes one step further than that, in that a lot of these far left groups truly believe that we are in late stage capitalism and the spark of the revolution will happen at any moment. And when I say revolution, you're 100% right. These people do not believe that elections are going to win them the victories that they want. They believe they have to violently overthrow the government. And a lot of these groups are forming right now and just basically waiting for something to happen to set things off. So, for example, back in 2020, George Floyd was the thing that set off several months of protests and riots and $2 billion worth of property damage. They're very literally waiting for another George Floyd moment to happen. And what they're trying to do is they think that this mass general strike in 2028 could be the thing that literally sparks violent revolution against the government. And if they're shutting down the schools and the airlines and the auto industry and Amazon and grocery stores in particular, that's the one I'm worried the most about. I think that they could, you know, agitate enough where they are going to cause a lot of destabilization. And I don't think anyone is really prepared to deal with that.
It's almost like they've taken what they've learned from George Floyd, and now they're like, okay, we're going to do it for real this time. Because the George Floyd protests, as organized as they were, and you had groups, you know, sending people around to different states to organize, it was organized to a degree, but it was still chaotic. It was still kind of madness. Their demands were nonsensical, like defund the police. What does that even mean? So they got concessions, and but they realized, like, okay, we can get concessions. We can activate millions of people onto the street. The federal government won't respond. The state governments will actually help and actually contribute to it. Now, all the people that even were arrested in 2020 are receiving giant million-dollar paychecks from the cities in these settlements that are slowly happening behind the scenes. So it seems like they took that lesson. And then, of course, the article that's been going super viral recently from Compact Magazine about the DEI and just the total genocide of, you know, working class and middle-class white people, they blame it on George Floyd, right? George Floyd was the excuse that they used to transform the newsrooms, to transform the Hollywood boardrooms, to transform academia. And it's all predicated on this one dude overdosing in Minnesota. It seems crazy, but it seems like they took that lesson and they're going to really maximize the effectiveness of that exact strategy. So I want to get into that more on the other side. We're going to go to a commercial break here. And then I want to ask you, and we don't have time to answer it in this segment, but how do they do it, Carlin? How is the left so organized, so incredibly successful at being everywhere all of the time and being well-funded and being well-organized? You've got strike schools and you've got anti-ICE trainings and you've got phone banks where they're working. And it's just like, we can't even get a protest going. Like, what is wrong with the right and what can we do better? So I want you to answer that on the other side. But before we go to break, the only way we figured out how to do this here at InfoWars is to have the AlexJonesStore.com. We have a very simple setup here. We give you the news. You go to the AlexJonesStore.com. That's it. There's no middleman. There's no advertisers. There's no pressure about from groups or corporations or nothing. If you like the news, if you like the information that we give you, you'll go to thealexjonesstore.com and help us stay on the air. If you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com, then we won't be on the air and we'll go away and we'll fail. Of course, that's not going to happen because every time the Alex Jones audience has come through and we've not only survived the attacks, but actually been able to grow in the face of all of the oppression. So thank you for going to thealexjonesstore.com and I encourage you to go now because after all, Christmas is going to come and go, and then it's going to be New Year's, and then it's going to be time for all of your resolutions. And don't let, you know, a lack of the appropriate supplementation stop you from achieving your goals. I do it myself. When it's time for New Year's resolution, when it's time for me to get my crap together, I usually start with supplements. And I go, okay, if I want to sleep well, I need this supplement. If I want to wake up quickly, I need this supplement. And I get all that figured out. And that helps me actually achieve my real goals. You can do that too at thealexjonesstore.com. More with Carlin Borashenko on the other side.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
And now, a major shipment has finally come back in for those of you that want to be able to stock up on it at InfoWarsStore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said,
This was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
Just like you want your own body to make vitamin D from the sunlight, you can't force it back in people who can't make it. It can actually hurt them. It's called peroxynitrites. So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf, and I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one, and the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
Because of the organic based compounds that are in it that cause vasodilation in the blood vessels, in the arteries, in the veins, in the capillaries. And it just does so many other great things.
So constricted blood vessels too, because athletes are running, they're constricted, they're working so that the blood flows and it doesn't flow, which is why your nitric oxide product, that new products, I hope you'll show it, because that's a very important thing to have for acute events. Dissolve under the tongue, give you an instant relaxing of your endothelium, your vasculature.
Now listen, it is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take this, it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. I was just researching and wanting to put something out that was good for the heart and talked to a lot of scientists and researchers I knew, and they said, well, these are the type of ingredients we were thinking about putting out a product. When I talked to formulators, they said, well, we actually already have a product that has that, so we private labeled it as Nitric Boost. And just for men in the morning when you wake up, that's the big thing people feel and see right away. So imagine what else it's doing for your body. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after The Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it, support us, we'll be off the air. So it's a paradox. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. And listen, men feel it in that one way. Women love it as well. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason one way or another we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
The Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster. Every crisis is an opportunity and the world will be reshaped in our vision. Down with the globalist. Get ultra methylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room, InfoWars.com, band.video. We have some breaking news here. It's official. Dan Bongino has announced he is going to be leaving his position with the FBI in January. He says, I want to thank President Trump, AG Bondi, and Director Patel for the opportunity to serve with purpose. More importantly, I want to thank you, my fellow Americans, for the privilege to serve you. God bless America and all those who defend her. So, yeah, we are speculating that over the last few days, and it appears as though, yes, he will be leaving in January. I wonder if he'll tell us the full story. We don't know. We don't know. But we'll bring any updates as we get them. But again, I'm happy to have Carlin Boroshenko as my guest. You can follow her on Substack at carlin.substack.com, and that's carlyn.substack.com, decodetheleft.com, youtube.com/@drcarlinb. I asked you the question before the break. I've had some time to think about it. I don't even know if there's an answer. How does the left do it, and why can we not? The organization is so good. They're so powerful. They seem to have people everywhere. How do they do it, Carlin? What are we missing?
Yeah, there is a very specific answer, and I'm really thrilled that you asked me this question because that's something I complain about literally all the time. The far left puts education at the center of what they do. They own a series of an entire network of bookstores nationwide where they're doing radical education. They have this outlet where people can go and find these books. They hold events there. They do study groups there. They do event organizing there. They coordinate there, all that stuff. They also have a network of radical revolutionary book publishers. So they're always infusing these ideas of the most far left organizers and activists into the ecosystem. They're constantly giving people stuff to look at. They're holding conferences. They're holding trainings. They hold book fairs. I went undercover at like half a dozen book fairs this year just to get leftist propaganda to see what was going on in those ecosystems. And people might think, oh, you know, it's a bookstore, big deal, or a book fair, big deal. But at the book fairs, they also do panels. They do meetings. They it's a chance for them to coordinate and meet each other. And the fact of the matter is there is something on the right that is just deeply opposed to doing basic education. You know, I get people on my YouTube channel all the time when I'm going through far left documents and trainings, and they say, Carlin, what do we actually do about this? Okay, we're watching these trainings, we're listening to the left, we're listening to you break down the language. What do we do? And the answer that I always give them is that you have got to learn as much about your enemy as possible. You have to learn how to break down the language. You have to learn how they're code switching in real time so you can understand how they're showing up in the world. You have to learn their organizing strategies. You have to learn about the thing you're fighting. And then the answer I get from people is, no, but what do we do, Carlin? What do we do? And the thing of it is the right doesn't think that education is important. They have diminished the, and listen, I understand, we have the K-12 public schools that are pushing leftist indoctrination. We have the colleges and universities that are completely run by the left. But I think the output of that is that the right has completely diminished the value of education. They refuse to participate in it. And so we have this situation where the right has a downright refusal to understand their enemy and what they're actually doing. And instead, they want to make up all these conspiracy theories about George Soros funding everything and everything being run by the Democratic Party, when the far left is flat out telling you they hate the Democrats and they don't want to work with them. And so I think that what the right needs to do is they need to revisit everything they think they know about the left. They need to start hinging into reality with what the left is actually saying and doing, because a lot of the clickbait content that I see on Twitter going massively viral, it is not hinged into reality with the way the far left operates in the real world. So the left is operating in a perverse reality in some respects, because they make a lot of stuff up too, but they are so focused on creating that vision, putting strategies in place to achieve that vision, volunteering their time to organize and to get people involved, reaching out to new people, making new people feel welcome in their community, and the right simply just doesn't do the same thing on their side.
Yeah, it's really pathetic. And of course, there is a symbiosis between the Democrats and the left, right? Because while they may pretend to hate each other, at the end of the day, a lot of the things that the leftists are pushing is then funded by USAID or whatever other, you know, government program that pushes this stuff. Because that's the other thing. It's like, I get the time. I mean, is this something that the right could do? Or do we just not have the characterization? Because the other thing that gets me is, like, there's something about the fervor of the left. And I always think about this one particular time I think it was the 2016 campaign, maybe in 2020. But you had this person interrupting, I think it was a thing with Bernie Sanders, and they're storming on stage and, like, ripping their shirt off and being pulled out, and they're screaming. And they were protesting milk. They didn't like milk. They were vegans and they didn't like milk. And it's like they're willing to get arrested and they're interrupting. And it's like, here we are literally being destroyed, like being actually like real things that we should actually care about. And we can't harness the same energy that they can about milk. And it's just like, what is wrong with us that we don't have the fervor that they have? Are we just missing something on the right? Is it our lack of willingness to cooperate with each other? I mean, psychologically, what do you think is stopping us from doing what the left is doing?
I think that there is a thing on the right where they just expect everyone else to fix their problems for them. They expect Trump to be the great savior of America and fix all their problems. They expect everyone in the government to fix their problems. They just want to talk about their problems and meme about their problems and complain about it, but they don't actually want to take action to go out and fix it. And I think also, Harrison, there's something to be said for the fact that the right has completely misunderstood how the left organizes and why they're able to get these mass turnouts for protests. A member of my community once said to to me. He was like, Carlin, the right thinks that the only protest that is legitimate is if some guy shows up on a sidewalk holding a cardboard sign and then other people decide to join him just off the cuff. And that's the only form of legitimate protest. They poo-poo on the left, like actually organizing their protests all the time. They say this is fake, this is paid, this is that. They convince themselves that these are all paid protesters that don't have jobs, when in fact, none of that is actually true. I mean, a lot of these people are paid to do activism, but they're paid to do activism through organizations that they themselves have started and done fundraising for and gotten money to do this stuff full time. And then they spend months planning some of these protests. They do organizing calls all the time. I infiltrate all of them on my channel, not all of them, but a lot of them. And I think that, you know, the right's perception of the left being totally fake paid protesters who don't have jobs, that actually informs how the right, you know, goes about their own organizing, because they don't think that doing what the left does is actually necessary or even a real thing. And so, again, I think this goes back to the right's got to stop memeing and start hinging into reality. You know, I have a nonprofit organization, the Center for Left-Wing Studies, and we're actively planning right now try to do a series of events in libraries all over the country, particularly in leftist areas, where I'm going to be going in and teaching other people how to go in as well and do presentations about what the far left does and how they organize and their language and all of that stuff. And so we are trying to get people a way to participate in the real world in real time. But I certainly do have doubts over whether or not that's going to be successful or whether or not I'm going to go to some of these libraries and it's just going to be a group of leftists who are screaming at me and not letting me do a presentation. Will the right even show up? I don't know, but I think that things are going to get worse before they get better. And I hope that at some point the right kind of gets their butts in gear and understands that they have to start fixing their own problems and stop waiting for Trump to save them.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of complicated, right? Because I get exactly what you're saying, but there's this weird thing that it's like, no, the government's supposed to be doing, it's like, it is supposed to be doing this. We are, it is, that's our team, right? Because I've mentioned this a few times on my show when, like, you know, you have TPUSA's doing an event and Antifa shows up there in this big block and starts attacking. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, where's our team? Where's our side going out to fight in the street like they are? And I'm like, well, my team's kind of like the cops. Like, the cops are supposed to be on my team. They're the ones who are supposed to be upholding the thing that I'm fighting for and that I love, the America, the American people in our state and our system. So it's frustrating because, like, theoretically, the government should be able to rely on it, but we can't get out of the mindset, or we can't accept the understanding that they're not out for us. They're not helping us. We do need to do this ourselves. I think your library tour could be a good litmus test. Are we serious about saving this country? And I think we are. And I think if you give people a place to go where they feel like they will be safe from, you know, leftist attack, as well as be able to actively contribute to a movement, I think people will flock there. I think it's a lack of tangible in the real world activity. We're too online. Is that a big part of it too? Yeah. But the left is online too. How much is the in-person stuff, how much importance does that play, like the book fairs and stuff? Is it because it's in person? Is that the part that matters?
I mean, the in-person stuff is incredibly important to the left. And sure, they use online in order to disseminate information out in their decentralized network, but it's not even just book fairs. I mean, they have like bookstores in every major city in the country where they use meeting spaces, people do events there, they do organizing meetings there, and all that stuff. And so the left has an incredible in-person organized network where people can go and participate, and they're constantly looking for opportunities to give people chances to do, you know, protesting or things like that. So the reason that there are so many protests on the left, this is something the right poo-poos, but it's like the reason there are so many protests on the left is that they're trying to give people ways to participate as a part of a social ecosystem in the real world, because the more protests that people go to, the more likely they are to become more radicalized and then engage in more violent direct action in the future. So the left is hyper mindful of this stuff. You know, it's funny because sometimes people ask me like how I can get away with going undercover at so many leftist events when I'm like a person on the internet. My face is on the internet. And I tell them, one of the things that helps me is that there are so many leftist events all over the country on any given weekend that they don't know where I'm going to be. Am I going to be at this one or this one or this one or this one? They have no idea because they are doing so many in-person events. And you're right. We should be able to rely on the government. We should be able to rely on the Trump administration to actually write an effective executive order against Antifa that actually defines what it means to be an Antifa. We should be able to rely on them to go and arrest the people doing the anti-ICE organizing or to actually just, you know, go into these immigrant communities and put them all on trucks and bus them back to Mexico. We should be able to rely on them to do all this stuff. But I think what the left understands is that they never relied on the government in the first place because they believe the government, to include the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, is a capitalist government that they want to abolish. And so they actually view themselves, actually, Antifa just published about this yesterday. They said, we have to form a network of activism that is completely independent of whoever wins the 2026 midterm elections, because that's one of the things. They don't want to rely on the government. They rely on themselves. And so if Trump and his administration actually gets their butts in gear and starts doing things, we should consider that a bonus, but we should not rely on that as our only tactic. We have to get out there and start creating the world that we want for not only ourselves, but also for people who have children. And I firmly believe, Harrison, that if people don't start pushing back on the left in the real world, I do think that they are going to try to overthrow the government in like 10 to 15 years. They're getting all their chess pieces in a row right now. And I think that if people don't wake up and start trying to throw sand in their gears, they will ultimately be successful.
So is that the right tactic to take, is throwing sands in the gears? Like, I guess it's not an either or. We could do both. But is the important thing now to combat their organizing, try to disrupt their networks? Or is it more important now to try to form networks of our own?
Well, I'll tell you what, like the tactic that I've had that has been the most effective is, I don't know if you heard about this, I actually got a communist faculty member at Texas State University fired because I recorded him in a secret meeting calling to overthrow the government, and then I released it on the internet, and that got him fired from his job. But the reason that this was so effective was because of the backlash of the left actually formed major organizations to combat this firing. They were organizing across all these different groups all over the country to get this professor his job back, to try to set the precedent that that people can have communist political beliefs in taxpayer-funded positions, and they can't get fired from their jobs as a result of that. And so I was actually doing battle with a whole bunch of people on the far left for months. They were doing entire presentations about us. They were really giving it their best shot, and ultimately we won. And the reason I bring this up is it really pissed the left off, and I have not seen the left organize against something like this aggressively coming from the right in the entire time I've been doing this. So I think it's about doing kind of like what I've been doing for, you know, lack of a better idea, I guess, which is going into their meetings, recording them, exposing them, making sure people see what's actually going on, and then following up and demanding that when people are in taxpayer funded positions and they're openly advocating for the overthrow of the government, you fire them from their taxpayer funded positions and you don't give them their job back. And I think that this is something that we've seen the left really rally against very aggressively, more than they're doing with anyone else on the right. So that's the direction I'm going to go down. I'm going to try to expose as many communists as possible and get people fired from these positions, so taking them out of positions of power. I don't know what else to do at this point. So that's my contribution to the cause, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's a great one. We covered that when that happened. It's like, man, if we have to do that one by one, we'll never get it done fast enough. There's got to be a way to cut the Gordian knot here, because we're never going to be able to untangle it in time. And again, you know, I actually had on Orrin McIntyre, because I was arguing with him about, he's like, oh, we already had our communist revolution. And I'm going, dude, have you ever read about communist revolutions? Like, we're talking mass death. We're talking like shutting down the economy for months at a time and rounding people up and putting them in camps. Like, okay, yeah, we have a very communist undercurrent going on right now because we sort of stopped defending ourselves once the Soviet Union fell. But like, when they're talking about shutting down the economy in 2.5 years, and the fact that they're planning this 2.5 years out, and the fact they'll have all of their actuaries in position, ready to go, queued up on the same script when that arrives, and we're not doing anything to stop it, they're really trying a communist revolution. Can you help expand on like what that means for people that aren't taking this seriously enough?
Yeah, and I gotta say, I'm completely unimpressed with Orrin McIntyre's analysis, if I'm honest about it. And I think the same goes for anyone who says something to the effect of, we've already had a communist revolution, it's already over. The fact of the matter is the left defines capitalism very specifically. Their ultimate goal is always to overthrow capitalism, but how do they define that is what matters. And their definition is private property ownership. It's not just an economic model, it's the cultural model. It includes things like home ownership, land ownership, apartment ownership, business ownership. They also consider parental parental rights to be a form of private property. This is why they're always attacking parental rights, because it allows for the passing of generational wealth. It includes things like the abolition of gender entirely, the abolition of the nuclear family, all that stuff. And right now, the fact of the matter is we still have all of those things. Now, it might be, you might make the argument that it's impossible for people to buy a home, but I mean, is it very difficult? And we should, you know, give solutions to that? Sure. But people can still buy private property right now. Parental rights do still exist. There are many people, the majority, in fact, that do believe that men and women are a real thing and not a social construct created by capitalism in order to create a gender hierarchy. The nuclear family still exists, and these are values that we can defend and uphold. And I think that the more people become aware of explicitly what the left is trying to do, the more it becomes obvious that we have not had a communist revolution in this country. They are trying, they're pushing all of these ideas in public schools and in universities and in their bookstores and in their book fairs and all of this stuff all over the country. But we have to first realize that we do have an opportunity to stop them. All hope is not lost, but we have to defend these very basic ideas, and we have to start getting in the game and going out there and, quite frankly, providing solutions and providing a vision. And I think that this is another area where the Republicans and the right-leaning people have really failed, is to provide a vision for America that allows people to achieve something like homeownership, or to be able to raise a family on a middle-class salary, and to be able to have, you know, mothers stay home with their kids if they want to, instead of just sending them to daycare, using the public schools as babysitting, you know, all throughout their lives. And I think that the right has failed to provide a vision in this regard. The left has not failed. Their vision is crazy. Their vision is going to lead to everyone dying. But at least they have a vision that they've articulated.
It's like shocking how aligned we are. Anybody who watches this show knows I've said exactly that same thing over and over. It's the right's fault for not making the case, not selling the narrative. The left has a very compelling narrative. Yeah, it's fake, it's retarded, it's crazy, but it's compelling, and it's actually speaking to the concerns people have. The right wing just isn't making the case, and it's just beyond frustrating. So I completely agree with you. Could not agree with you more. And it almost seems like you and I approach it from like different. You're a bottom up. I'm a top down in investigating this, because when I see this, I'm looking at, okay, who else is trying to get rid of private property? It's BlackRock. It's the World Economic Forum. It's these billionaires that are, you know, pushing things out. When you look at why 2014 was the year that all the white people started to get fired, it's like, well, BlackRock and Linda Rothschild and the Rockefellers all decided to write letters to all of their investors saying, here's what we're doing from now on. Like, so I see it from a top down, whereas you are there in the grizzly bits down at the bottom in the mud with all the actual boots on the ground people. Do they not realize, like, how do they think about this? Because to me, it seems so obvious that they hate billionaires and then serve all the billionaires' interests. They despise BlackRock, but agree with them completely on things like private property. Do they confront that cognitive dissonance? Or do they even consider that cognitive dissonance? How do they make sense of this?
Yeah, that is a great question. And actually what it is the left is hyper aware of everything that you just talked about, and they hate those people, and they talk about how much they hate them behind closed doors. I remember being undercover at the socialism conference a couple of years ago and actively listening to them having these conversations. And so how I kind of frame it for people is, you know, everything you just said is true, but the people that you're talking about are playing on a different team than the left is playing, and they may have very similar goals, but how I liken it is like, it's like the Red Sox and the Yankees, right? They're both playing baseball. They both have the same goal of winning the World Series. They're in the same sport, but they're not on the same team. And what that means is they both want the same thing, but they have very different ideas about how to get there. And they're just going to fight at some point. So I think that these two groups are going to fight each other at some point. And there's going to be like all of us that are just like, can we just be left alone and just like have our houses and have our capitalism, have all the, can you guys?
Right.
And we're going to be stuck in the middle of it.
You know, maybe I'm thinking about the wrong way, because I'm sitting here thinking, like, why are the people on the ground? Why is Antifa so dumb that they're, you know, working for the billionaires? Maybe the question I should be asking is, why are the billionaires so dumb that they're promoting the same stuff that the communists that want to kill them promote? Why can't, if the billionaires would be on our team for real and help us crush Antifa, maybe we could get stuff done. But I don't know. It's just like, why are all these billionaires on the left? And but you don't tend to think that that's as big of an influence as the on the ground stuff, the George Soros's, the Open Societies Foundation. You're not as concerned with that, because even if that goes away, the left is still funding each other and themselves, right?
Well, I think that that's very true. But the other factor is that I just think there's so many people already talking about that. I mean, there's people like you that have been talking about that for a long time. The reason that I focus on the area I focus on is because no one else is focused on this area. And so I wanted to try to take it from a different angle. And I think that, you know, the boots on the ground information and how they're actually organizing in the real world and the propaganda that's spreading in their ecosystem, what I have found is that it is incredibly predictive of what the left is going to do in the real world. So, for example, I was talking about anti-ICE organizing on the left back in January because Antifa was publishing that they were going to do anti-ICE organizing specifically as one of their primary tactics. No one else was even talking about this until June when everything started blowing up in Los Angeles and things like that. And so I think that's it's incredibly valuable to talk about both angles. And I think we should be talking about both angles. I've just chosen to focus on this one.
It's incredibly valuable, and that's why I love all of our different guests, because usually our guests will focus on one particular thing. I'm trying to cover the waterfront here. I don't have the energy or time or resources to delve into everything as deeply as folks like yourself do. Again, folks, my guest is Karlyn Borischenko. It's karlyn.substack.com, decodetheleft.com, youtube.com/@DrKarlynB, and that's DrKarlynB. And I say it over and over because not only do people always tweet me after, who was that woman you had on? So I like to say it over and over, but also because I think what you do is something I want all of our audience doing. I want them all going out and maybe disrupting leftist protest if you can do it peacefully, but certainly investigating them and getting the evidence and tracking them and, you know, calling your congressman and saying, do you know this is about to happen? They're doing this. So again, that's why I think what you do is so valuable, because it's an example and you actually bring people in and create a community of people doing this. I think it's great. What are you doing next? What are you working on now, or can you not tell us?
Yeah, no, I can absolutely tell you. And actually, what you just talked about is one of the things I'm working on right now. Is I do want to do this Occupy Library series of events that we've talked about before, but I also want to do that in conjunction with giving normal people the resources to come and do what I do. Because the fact of the matter is there is so much content that the left is producing. There are so many organizing calls. I can't possibly watch all of it and infiltrate all of it. And so I'm building a community of people where I'm teaching you how to go into these meetings. I'm doing a series of videos right now teaching people how to go undercover at leftist events. It's not as hard as you think it is, and you don't have your face on the internet like I do, so it'll actually be easier for most people. And I want to try to take all the recordings and the materials that we've been gathering and make it publicly available on Decode the Left and through the Center for Left-Wing Studies so that we can start to bring more awareness and also give the people the resources to go into libraries in their communities and to do these presentations where they're teaching people, like, use my content. I don't care. Just show people what the left is doing and what's actually going on. And so that's a big part of what I'm going to be doing in 2026.
Well, it's very exciting, and I think you're exactly right. People need to get involved. We cannot rely on anybody but ourselves, and the left is frankly just outworking us, and that really is the issue. It's not like they're smarter or clever. They're actually almost all very dumb, unimpressive people, but the unimpressive person that works beats the talented person that stays home. Incredible stuff. Karlyn Borischenko, thank you so much. DecodeTheLeft.com. You can follow her on X at Dr. Karlyn B. Thank you so much for being here with us. We'll be back for the third hour on the other side. Your phone calls, lots of videos, and still a ton more news to come. Stay with us. It's The War Room, the Alex Jones Store.com is how you support us.
Remember, you fund this operation. I'm very thankful to you, and I'm challenging you, those that have supported, love the products, and those that have never gotten the products, to do your Christmas shopping with us. If you get your orders in by Friday, you're guaranteed to get it way before Christmas anywhere in the United States. Okay, because we ship out like a day after the orders come in, and most of the country gets it in 2 days. The rest three, Hawaii or Alaska, I think it's like four. So get your orders in now. The biggest sale so far, 60% off on the ultramethylene blue, on the Shilajit, on the Irish sea moss, incredible super nutrient compounds that just blow you away. You owe it to yourself to get it. Our information's strong. You know that. The products are just as strong and just as powerful. I'm challenging you to support the broadcast. Those of you who have never gotten a supplement, go to thealexjonesstore.com. Make the decision now. Get our ultramethylene blue. Get our Shilajit. Get our bovine colostrum. It's amazing. Experience it, and you're going to be hooked. And then we can continue on the air in a symbiotic relationship. But I need your help. Give yourself the gift of great health, clarity, and focus, and keeping powerful beacon of truth on the air. A 360 total win-win at thealexjonesstore.com. We also have limited edition fundraiser posters to keep us on the air at infowarsstore.com. I can't do this without you. You're not key, you're everything.
Well, hello there, Info Warriors. We are having a 60% off sale on selected items. Take a look behind me. We have the sea moss and Shilajit gummies. And you know, we have the medical grade methylene blue that will light your ass up like a Christmas tree. You can also buy one of me in the store. Act now while supplies last.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.